Hey guys, it's Dan. So this is part three of our series on race, culture, and food. Who is this restaurant for? Now, if you haven't heard the first two episodes, you will be able to understand this episode, but the series was designed to be listened to in order. I think that is the best listening experience. So please, if you haven't already, check out episodes one and two and come on back. I'll be right here waiting. Thanks.
If they love the food, that's even better. If they hate the food, I'm so sorry for them. They have no taste. But
you cannot please everyone, so you have to have a strategy.
But what strategy? How do restaurants appeal to really different groups of customers at the same time? And what happens when two of the groups have irreconcilable differences?
Because it's not in a brightly lit fluorescent served by surly middle-aged Korean woman, it's just we're just under attack.
From WNYC Studios, this is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. Welcome to part three of Who Is This Restaurant For? It's a look at how restaurants attract their target customers, the signals they send to tell us what kind of place it is and whether it's for us. Today, we'll talk with three chefs who are all trying to appeal to really different groups of customers at the same time. Amanda Cohen runs a vegetarian restaurant called Dirt Candy in Manhattan. She's the first vegetarian chef in 17 years to get 2 stars from the New York Times. But she doesn't only want vegetarian customers. Amanda also wants generally adventurous eaters. In fact, when I asked her who her target audience is, she didn't even use the word vegetarian.
People who wanted to eat way too much and drink way too much and spend way too much. So basically like a billionaire who's like on their way into like a couple of recovery programs.
And we'll have Hassan Diab. He runs Duzan Mediterranean Grill in Astoria, Queens.
So there is so many different cultures in Astoria. My restaurant is in Stanway Street. It's in 2 blocks that it's called Little Egypt.
Around Little Egypt, as you might guess, there are a lot of Middle Easterners. But Hassan also wants to attract the gentrifiers moving in. And also today we'll have So-hee Kim. She runs a Korean barbecue place called Insa in Gowanus, Brooklyn, which is already pretty gentrified. She wants to bring in people from that neighborhood who barely know kimchi from bibimbap, and...
And also please Korean customers, you know, Korean Americans who grew up with the flavors and say, oh, that tastes just like what my mom made, you know.
I spoke with all three chefs live on stage at Taste Talks in Brooklyn. Here's So-hee Kim talking about Insa.
It's like a crossover restaurant that, you know, should really exist in sort of an enclave, you know, a Korea town, but taking it out and putting it into a different environment or a different neighborhood and seeing if it floats. So it was really nerve-wracking because we had to hit a lot of targets, you know.
So can you give me a couple of, just off the top of your head, what do you think of a couple of specific things that you did to attract people who would be looking for more authentic Korean food? Mm-hmm. You know, what are some signals that you sent to them, and what are some things that you thought of as signals to send to other people to make it feel accessible to them?
Sure, and I think you approach that, you know, two-prong. One, when you design the menu, you make sure that you cater to, obviously, the people that you're targeting. And so, yes, have the bibimbap, you know, have the traditional Korean barbecue that people know, the kalbi, the bulgogi, all that stuff that's become, you know, part of our lexicon now. But also offer things that are a little bit esoteric, like Korean blood sausage, house-made fish cakes, oden, you know, different dishes that sort of make it fuller. Now, you know, I've come under a lot of criticism by various people. You know, when you try to do too much, you get sometimes, you know, the criticism just never stops.
Do you sense that criticism has come more from the people who want authentic?
Oh, the Koreans, yeah.
Tell me about that.
So because it's not, you know, because it's not in the brightly lit fluorescent served by surly middle-aged Korean woman, it's just, we're just under attack. You know, the place is too dark or, you know, it's not noisy. It just comes from all over the place. But in terms of the food and the targeting, well, you know, she's going for authenticity, but she's messing around with this. And that's the other thing. I'm going for authentic flavors, but as a chef, you try to tweak and make things better. Like, you know, I have fond memories of the spicy rice cakes, but I've always thought that it would be better in a certain way. And I've taken that liberty and taken the chance to make those small little tweaks and corrections, but they're definitely open for...
And when you get that kind of criticism from Korean people, how do you feel about it?
Well, you just, you know, sometimes you have to pay attention to it, but it's my own conviction that this is, it tastes better. And I think that, you know, we ask ourselves, who is this restaurant for? It really is to, it's for really me and my concept of what I want to bring, you know, to the neighborhood.
Amanda, you are also straddling a couple different constituencies. I noticed when I asked you who you perceived your restaurant to be for, you did not use the word vegetarian.
That's true.
So how do you straddle those constituencies, appealing to vegetarians, but also to people who might just want a different kind of food?
You know, from the beginning of Dirt Candy, we're now in our eighth year, we figured that the vegetarians would come because it was a natural restaurant for them to come to, and vegans would come to. But who wouldn't necessarily come were sort of more omnivore eaters. And that's who we really focus on.
So you're right. You're making me think of sort of like the classic Democratic presidential campaign. Because it's sort of like, the Bernie supporters will come around, but we got to get the Republican right. suburban housewives to vote for us. We got to move to the middle and find a way to get them over.
Yeah, exactly. So I have that basic base, which I can always count on, but I need a much bigger base to support my restaurant.
Right. Hassan, I note that last year you closed the restaurant for several months. You underwent a major $350,000 renovation.
Right.
To really change the look and feel of your restaurant.
Right.
And can you give me some specific examples of design choices you made that you thought would be more appealing to, for lack of a better term, hipsters, not the Middle Eastern people who live in the few blocks around your place?
Absolutely. When you say hipster, you say reclaimed wood and reclaimed bricks. So where all those trends you gotta have to follow,
right.
Because if you're not, you know, I was with this, I tracked my wife sometime. I bought my food in just different containers, and I send it to her as a delivery. And I told her that it was from another restaurant, and she convinced me that it was better than my restaurant. So
because it was packaged in a different container.
Exactly. So rebranding takes any restaurant to a totally different level.
So did you switch to those new containers?
Absolutely.
Can you describe, for people who can't, because we can't see it, describe the old container and the new container?
Yeah, everybody knows those aluminum containers, 9-8 inches aluminum containers.
The round ones with the clear plastic top.
Yeah,
right.
And everybody knows those eco-friendly containers, brown containers.
They're like compostable containers?
Yeah, with some color sticker on the top just to make it look nice.
So the compostable brown one, that's the new one, and your wife thought the food was better?
Yeah.
And you're still married.
Yeah.
And she said that to you.
Yeah.
You're a strong man.
Yeah, right?
What changes did you make in the remodeling to make sure that you didn't lose your more traditional Middle Eastern customers?
When you enter the store, there is a sentence written on Arabic.
Mural.
Yeah. There is this writer in the Middle East. His name is Mahmoud Darwish. And he have a very famous poem that was made to a song, a very famous song in the Middle East. And it says, "Ahennu ila khubzi ummi," and it means, "I miss my mother's bread." And people get very connected to it because food brings so much memories. And when you think of your mom, you think of food right away. When you think of food, you think of your mom. And especially people who immigrate to other countries, they really miss their mother's cooking. So it connects the people with their emotions to the restaurant.
And I just want to make sure I'm clear. So you wrote these words up on the wall, but am I right? You only wrote them in Arabic?
Yeah.
Not in English.
Exactly. But then when you look at the brick wall in front of you, it says love and shawarma. And that talks to the hipster. So, and I want it. That's exactly what happened. So it worked really well.
One note to add, Hassan says that since he remodeled his place, the ratio of customers has actually stayed about the same, around 40% Middle Eastern, 60% everyone else. But across the board, business has more than doubled. So he's getting more of everyone. Coming up, our conversation will continue. Amanda talks about what she sees when she goes out to eat that tells her a place isn't welcoming to women. And Hassan explains how he sends different signals to Israeli and Palestinian customers. Stick around. Let me just go ahead and open up the podcast portal. And who's here? Oh, it's my friends, Mike and Ian from How to Do Everything.
So the idea is there is an interdimensional portal through which we can connect our two shows.
Correct. We're in it right now.
We have a portal across space and time, and what we're using it for is to promote podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, really, when you think about it, it's not that different from a phone.
It does seem like a waste, Dan. It does seem like a waste.
Look, let's worry about that next time. For now, let's just tell people to listen to your show.
I'd really rather not.
How to Do Everything. Get it where you get your other podcasts.
Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC Studios. I'm Dan Pashman. Please make sure you subscribe to this podcast wherever you get it. I know that I keep saying that, but I just don't want you to ever miss an episode. You can go ahead and hit subscribe right now while you're listening. Thanks. Now, back to my conversation with Sohi Kim of INSA, Hassan Diab of Dusan Mediterranean Grill, and Amanda Cohen of Dirt Candy, taped live on stage at Taste Talks in Brooklyn. I want to talk more about language, the words that we choose. And Amanda, I know, right from, you know, one of the things, when I first heard about Dirt Candy many years ago, I'm not a vegetarian, but
I'm not either.
I like, right. but I have been eating, trying to eat less meat,
right.
And I just heard the food was amazing. And, but I'm also kind of, I have a natural sort of skepticism and aversion of preachy, pretentious people of all stripes, vegetarians and otherwise. And one of the things that struck me right off the bat just looking at your website was that it was funny, that there was humor on your website. You have a line on there that says, anyone can cook a hamburger, leave the vegetables to the professionals. You describe your Korean fried broccoli as crack in broccoli form. You have a snack called Whatever Pickles that's described in the menu as, quote, a pickle plate of whatever we have that week.
Exactly.
Why was it important to you to give off that kind of a vibe?
Because I think food should be fun, really. And I think going to a restaurant should be fun. So I want people to come and have fun at the restaurant and have that as their memory. And if they love the food, that's even better. If they hate the food, I'm so sorry for them. They have no taste. But yeah, I mean, we make fun of half the dishes on our menu. We make fun of me on the back of the menu is one of the facts is, you know, we have like 19 Yelp reviews and most of them are because the owner has a poor attitude. No, I don't. But that's the experience I want them to have.
And was part of the thought process to disarm people who are meat eaters who might be skeptical of a vegetarian restaurant?
Well, yeah, I think a lot of vegetarian restaurants, maybe not so much now, but certainly, you know, 10 years ago, they were thought to be really serious because they had all this sort of like political sort of thought behind them or environmental thought or health thought behind them. Those were sort of all the things that people were bringing to the restaurant. And there's no thought behind my restaurant other than I like good food and this is what I want to cook. And there's no sort of those preconceived notions. So we really wanted people to know right away that we were unlike every other, not just vegetarian restaurant, but every other restaurant out there that, you know, we could laugh at ourselves.
And so he, at INSA, I noticed when I look at the menu that it's printed, the items are printed both in Korean and English.
Yes.
Please correct me if I'm wrong. I would suspect that most of the people who come into INSA, even if they're Korean and speak and read Korean, also speak and read English.
Right.
Is that fair to say?
I think so.
There's not
definitely
a lot of people,
no.
Where you're located in that area of Brooklyn,
yeah.
you don't have a lot of people
no.
who would struggle to read an English menu.
Right, right.
Why did you choose to print the menu items in Korean as well as English?
So I wanted to appeal to the Koreans and the non-Koreans and the people who are familiar with Korean food and who are not. And aesthetically, I think the Korean written language is very beautiful. So yeah, it was an aesthetic choice and also a choice to just appeal to everybody and say, you know, we're not excluding. We are not that hated hipster restaurant.
Hassan, I want to ask you about how you use language in your restaurant. Queens County, I believe, is the most diverse county
in
all of America.
Probably in the world, yeah.
Possibly in the world.
Yeah.
You got people there coming to speak a lot of different languages. How do you use language to make different people feel welcome in your restaurant?
Right. So I came here when I was 17 years old, so I'm a New Yorker. I was born in Haifa. Haifa is in Israel, and I am originally Palestinian. So I speak Arabic, I speak Hebrew, and I speak English and a little Spanish. And we have a very high percentage of customers who comes from Israel and from the Arab world. So a lot of the Middle Eastern guys comes and they think that I'm Israeli, so they don't like me much. And a lot of the Israelis also come and think that I'm an Arab, so they don't like me as much. So I speak with the Israeli customers in Hebrew, and they love it. I speak with the Arab crowd in their language and in their dialogue, because that's another thing also. There's 24 Arab countries and totally different dialogues and different accents. So I try to highlight some words, and I just throw them in any customer comes. And they think that I speak the language. So
I want to switch gears a little bit and talk a bit about some of the codes and signals that women see when they come into a restaurant.
Very
and
big fan.
The signals that may make women feel more or less welcome. Amanda, how much thought did you put into that in the designing? So I should tell listeners who don't know, Dirt Candy, for years, was an 18-seat tiny restaurant, has recently moved to a much larger 60-seat location, still called Dirt Candy, still a vegetarian restaurant. In the designing of both of your restaurants and in the various factors that you put into it, tell me about the role that plays, thinking about how are women in particular going to perceive some of these signals.
It doesn't really apply to me because I'm a vegetarian vegetable restaurant, so it's like a natural like glue for women. They just like come.
So are there things you do to make men feel comfortable?
I mean, I thought we were. It's not particularly a feminine restaurant. It's not a masculine restaurant either, but you know, it's not, there's not a lot of pink in there. I don't know what it is. What we can do to get more men in, except maybe put ourselves up on a dating site.
What are some things, are there specific examples of things that you, when you go out to eat, make you feel more or less comfortable or welcome as a woman when you're going out to eat?
There's two things that really put me off a restaurant where I feel like as a woman, they clearly don't want me there. One is I often go out for dinner with my husband and he will get handed the wine list. I'm always like, yeah, but he doesn't know anything about it, so that's useless. And he's like looking at it upside down. And I'm like, right away, like, you've got this all wrong. The other thing that really puts me off a restaurant is if the female servers are in a uniform that is different than the male uniform, and if it's particularly sexy. I just feel like right away that is a restaurant that is not meant to be inclusive of all diners. I mean, it's just weird.
And Hassan, I know that the area of Queens you're in, there are nearby, there's a lot of hookah bars. There are some storefronts in that area that are very dominated by men.
Right.
What do you do to try to make women feel comfortable in your restaurant?
Absolutely. So this is very, very important in this two blocks is usually all the restaurants or any delis or any grocery stores operated by men only. A woman wouldn't be so happy to go in a place that is just full of men. So I hired females only for the cashier. Customer interact with females on the service better than males, usually. And also it appeals to women as much more inviting than only men's store, especially in Little Egypt.
Did you get any reaction from the Middle Eastern people who live in that area about the fact that you had women?
Sometimes we get reaction about the music, sometimes about who works there. You cannot please everyone, so you have to have a strategy and to follow that strategy. And you would have to accept that you would lose some people to make what I think is right for the other customers.
That's Hassan Diab of Duzan Mediterranean Grill in Astoria, Queens, Amanda Cohen of Dirt Candy in Manhattan, and Sohee Kim of INSA in Brooklyn. So he also owns The Good Fork, which you may remember was where we taped our show a while back about going out to eat in a wheelchair. And so he has her first cookbook coming out very soon. It is fantastic. It's called The Good Fork Cookbook. Pre-order it now. Tomorrow, we'll wrap up our series, Who Is This Restaurant For? Comedian W. Kamau Bell will talk about going out to eat when you're in an interracial marriage.
There is a sense that if we're going to a nice place, I go, honey, why don't you go use some of your white people skills to get their attention, to get us a table, or to find out how long the wait is.
That's tomorrow. This show is a production of WNYC Studios and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sani and me. Editing help from Shoshana Gold. Engineering help from Noriko Akabe. Special thanks to Paula Schumann. And thanks to all our friends at Taste Talks, especially Brian Quinn, Jenny Mills, Paige Winston, Allison Bryce, and Talia Ralph. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
This is Oliver Camacho in Chicago, Illinois, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.